But first, comedian Fred Armisen. The Saturday Night Live and Portlandia star is not only a comedian, he's also a drummer.
Did you feel it? Did you feel it? Did you hear about these baseball guys? Barry Bonds admitted to using steroids. Hey, Barry, next time you get roid rage, do what I do. Use Preparation H.
I do me.
Throughout his career, Fred has combined music with comedy. He melds both passions on his tour, Comedy for Musicians, But Everyone is Welcome.
It's more like discussing music. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll play some music off of my iPad or just stuff that I've found and just talk about it a little bit. And then I go into some of the, you know, quirks about being a guitar player, how we hear guitar, how we hear certain kinds of chords. Mm-hmm. I do a little bit of a history of punk rock.
Yeah, and punk rock drumming in particular, don't you? Can you tell me a bit about that? I'm very intrigued by that.
Well, it's just everything I love. You know, yeah. I am always going to be a punk, and I grew up on punk, and being a drummer, it's the road, it's the sort of crossroads of everything that I love. So I just try to filter it down to like a style, like, you know, 1976 punk, 1977 British punk, that kind of thing, going all the way through now. I mean, people have different opinions as to what punk really is. Mm-hmm. It's just my version of it. Yeah. I kind of include new wave, and I include bands like Tame Impala. I even consider them part of like the scene, whatever that scene is. Mm-hmm. Is the progression of what punk rock is.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite punk rock drummer?
Easily. Clem Burke from Blondie. He really was, or is, you know, everything that I love about punk rock drumming.
How so? Can you tell me, like, what is it about
Clem's
style?
It's presentational. Mm-hmm. It's very, it's theatrical, but not overly theatrical. Mm-hmm. So it has just enough shine and glitter to it, but also very, very 4-4. Mm. 4-4 timing, very heavy, very driving, heavy on the toms, lots of fills. Lots of cymbals. It's like driving a bus, but also showing off driving a bus.
Mm-hmm. But not showing off it so much that you crash, that the bus goes off the road and crashes or something.
Right. It's not like a parade float.
Yeah.
It's not like that kind of showing off.
Yeah.
It's like it's still utilitarian.
Yeah.
And it's still going forward. But there's some showiness to it.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe your own drumming style?
Frenetic, kind of all over the place, maybe a little too fast.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely on the high end of like treble, you know what I mean? Like this sort mm-hmm. of more timbale, Latin. The sounds of it aren't very deep. I don't have a lot of low end. It's all that sort of high, you know. My snare drum's tuned really high. My rack tom is tuned really high. Very sort of trebly, but Latin influence, still very punk rock.
Yeah. How much of that Latin influence comes from the couple of years of your childhood that you spent living in Brazil?
A lot. Because my first first time I really saw drums was I was right at the right age in Brazil where I saw some, you know, for samba schools or samba parades.
Right.
So I'd see those surdos, like these big, you know, sort of almost like bass drums but played like a upright. Almost like a snare drum, and so that was like my first witness to all and to that kind of that style, and it always stayed with me. To this day, samba music really does affect me, and I know my sister feels the same way, just because we heard it at such a young age. And then I got into like rock and other stuff, and it wasn't until later, much much later, like in my late 20s, that I got into salsa music and Tita Puente and people like that, and Celia Cruz, and, you know, the mix of it that I used to hear would be like Bow Wow Wow.
Mm.
So I was into punk, but they had like such a, for lack of a better word, tribal feel with their drums.
Yeah.
That was the kind of really perfect marriage of everything for me.
Yeah, interesting. In 1988, you moved from New York to Chicago to be the drummer for a band called Trench Mouth, but you eventually quit that band. And then in 1988, you decided to go to South by Southwest and pose as a music journalist and film your interviews. Why did you decide to do that?
1998.
Yeah, I got. I thought that sounded wrong. Yeah, 1998.
Yeah, that's okay. I do that all the time.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank
and,
you.
And we can even say that 1998 is a celebration of 1988.
Yeah, it was the 10-year anniversary.
10-year anniversary.
There you
so
go.
We were like, let's celebrate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
What made me want to do it? It was really frustration.
This seminar was called The Art of the Interview. It's this talk about how to give an interview and get the most out of your artist. I'm actually not sure exactly what she was talking about, but she seemed very focused about it.
Does anybody have any questions like this?
Yeah, from the other side of that, if you're interviewing someone and you want to get someone to loosen up a little bit, do you think it's proper or right to threaten them physically, say with a switchblade or a pistol or something, or is that...
Well, that's an interesting approach, threatening them with a switchblade, would certainly, I'm not sure if that's the response you're looking for, but you might just be seeing the back of them as they fly out the door.
I felt very frustrated by the music scene. I was in a band, and I felt like we weren't getting very far. And for some reason, I just felt like, you know, South by Southwest is all about how to make it in the music biz. And I was very, like, I think I was just, I had a chip on my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, I'll make fun of it. I'll do a video where it's like making light of, you know, if anything, ambition and planning. It's almost like making fun of the idea of planning ahead. And the thing that I've discovered over the years is, for as much as I made fun of, you know, trying to go to a music festival to try to make it, it took me going to a music festival until I made it doing comedy.
Yeah. So how were you able to parlay the film into an audition for Saturday Night Live?
Well, it goes like this. It's like the video I would show at clubs around the country. You know, like I'd go to L.A.,
mm-hmm.
show it there, and people would come out. And all of a sudden, that was becoming like my act. I was just, instead of having a band, I would just go show this video. Then Bob Odenkirk saw that in L.A. at this club called Largo.
Yeah.
I mean, doing these different characters. Put me on a pilot for a sketch show he was doing called Next.
Right, for Fox Television.
Yeah.
Right,
put
yeah.
Put me on that. And then that didn't go. The show didn't go, but I had all this video of me doing all these characters sort of on a TV show. And then my manager at the time sent it to Marcy Klein at Saturday Night Live. She loved the tape and made Lorne Michaels watch it. And then they had me audition, and then I got the audition.
I just got my taxes done. Have you heard about these things, these taxes? Apparently. Mackie on drums, everybody.
During your time on SNL, you often portrayed drummer characters like Fedorcito and Mackie, a senile drummer. Do you see these characters as a way of maintaining your identity as a drummer?
Oh, definitely. I mean, for as much as I feel like, you know, I never got to make it as a drummer, I kind of did get to. By the way, make it is like a really weird term.
What I mean is
like to make a living from,
yeah.
Or like, I don't mean to, you know, separate what success looks like or anything like that. I just mean in terms of making a living at it.
Yeah.
And in a way, you know, when I was doing those sketches, I just felt like, well, here's my version of getting to, you know, make a living playing drums. You know, I don't consider myself that brilliant of a drummer where it could have been anything else. I know brilliant drummers, you know, like the guys in Tortoise and, you know, CNK and all those people or Todd Trainer.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can't be that, but I could certainly do an impression of a type of drummer.
Mm-hmm.
So if I could do that, well, that's something, you know, maybe that's my way in. It's my way into the drummer's club.
Yeah, and it's turned out that it really has been, yeah. Since timing is such an important part of comedy, I'm curious about how being a drummer affects the rhythms and timings of your speech when you're portraying characters who are not musicians.
It's really very related
mm-hmm.
in many ways, and in ways that also I realized as I kept going, just in like even the rhythm of how long a song takes,
mm-hmm.
or in how long a sketch takes, going up in front of an audience and having a beginning of a song and the end of a song and talking about a song. It's so similar that I really, more than anything, my training, not just from drumming, but just from being in a band,
mm-hmm.
I think that was kind of, there was value to it. As much as I look back now and I sometimes think, boy, you know, we had a rough time, I think I did learn a lot about people's attention spans, being on a stage, I don't know, too much lighting, too little lighting,
yeah.
good sound quality. But, you know, stages that are too nice sometimes has an effect.
Yeah, you don't want them too nice.
You don't want them too nice.
No.
You need a little, gotta have some, you know, life to it.
Yeah, some life, yeah. some dirt, some detritus,
like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just something.
Yeah.
So all of that stuff put together is what, you know, I mean, I'm still learning, by the way. I'm not like, I haven't figured out how to do comedy. I mean more like, it's just helping me learn what audiences, because it changes all the time, too, people's attention spans and expectations, and so, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Well, I haven't figured out how to do radio, so.
Yeah, that's good, though. I mean, that's good. Yeah, the way that you're thinking about it, about doing radio, I think is really healthy, and even though he might have been making, like, an understatement or an overstatement, I saw Paul McCartney once. He was saying that, I think he was, like, talking to a group of music students, and he was saying, like, I actually still don't know what I'm doing.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm probably...
Wow.
I think I'm paraphrasing how he said it, but it was basically that he still approaches it like he's still trying to figure it out, which is really the best way to make art.
Absolutely, to continue to learn and experiment and try new things, yeah.
Yeah.
You carried your musical sensibility into your next big project, Portlandia, the sketch comedy series that you created with your fellow musician, Carrie Brownstein of Slater Kinney. And you had a lot of musicians on the show, like Eddie Vedder, The Flaming Lips, Amy Mann, and St. Vincent. Was that baked into the original concept of Portlandia, or did you and Carrie come up with it as the show evolved?
It was just inevitable. It's just what our world is anyway. Mm-hmm. So it was just such an easy... It really was the easiest route to take. It's something that we both know, and it's people that we both know. None of them were strangers to us. Steve Jones and Jeff Tweedy and all the people you mentioned.
Get over here. Do you see that?
Oh, it's our cleaning lady. That's great.
It's Amy Mann.
What? That's not Amy Mann.
Yes, it is.
Amy!
Amy!
It's so crazy. She's like in our house.
Why is she cleaning her house?
I mean, I guess the music industry must be really suffering or something. I don't know.
There's also a quality you get to a musician performing in that way that you don't get with comedians. You know, there's something a little weirder about it, which I liked.
Yeah.
You know, which was like, it was less rehearsed.
Yeah, more spontaneous for sure. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, one of the things that I really like about Portlandia is the strong sense of place that the show has. It reminds me of SCTV, which, of course, took place in the town of Mellonville. Was SCTV an influence?
Yeah, SCTV is like an influence through almost everything I've done. Like, even at SNL, I remember I'd be talking to Bill Hader, and we were like, some sketches were just straight up SCTV sketches. I was like, I just want to do something that I imagine they would do on SCTV. So that was kind of like the goal. And I'm always going to really idolize Rick Moranis.
Mm. Yeah.
His career, something about him, something about the way he was on the show. Like, I think I'm always just going to be like, man, that is the guy.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah, and he's also, like you, he's not only a comedian and musician, he had that great album a few years ago. What was it, The Agoraphobic Cowboy?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that you're a big fan of the band Devo. I am too. And one of my favorite Devo quotes is, choose your mutations carefully. So I'd like to ask you, do you think you have chosen your mutations carefully over the course of your life?
I think they chose me.
Yeah.
I think these mutations sort of, even the way that they've made themselves known to me, was almost out of my control, which I kind of like.
How so?
There's like a real lesson in life of like, you know, you think you know the way that what you're supposed to do, and life knows better,
yeah.
Which is kind of great.
Yeah.
It's kind of great that, like, that's how surprising life is. It sort of taps you on the shoulder and says, you know, we're going to try this instead.
Yeah. Can you give me an example of a mutation that chose you?
I think my connection to Latin America. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that chose me.
Yeah.
As a little kid growing up, you want to be like everybody else. So I wanted to be Swedish or Italian, you know, whatever was around me. And it, you know, and I didn't want to learn this other language. My mom was teaching me Spanish. I want to speak English like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to assimilate. Well, this mutation was like, this is going to be a strength for you. This is going to like really open up your world. This is going to affect your drumming and how you see comedy and how you see language. So that's a mutation that kind of like picked me.
Yeah.
And failure as a mutation made itself known to me as like a something that could be an asset. So where I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to be the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I only want to be the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Please, God, please. And then this mutation is like, well, that's not what we have in store for you, but we've got something. What do you think of this?
Yeah.
And it's, to me, you know, much more fitting. I pick, you know, I'm happy that Portlandia is a part of my life.
You got to be Fred Armisen.
I got to be Fred Armisen.
Fred Armisen is a comedian and a drummer. You can find out more about Fred on our website, wpr.org/beta.
These movies have a lot of common themes, and one of the really big themes is identity, this idea of who am I? Could I be someone else? Is there a way of changing my life?
Writer Brian Raftery tells us why so many great movies were released in 1999. That's coming up in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.